around school-based joint use agreements in the county. So I have no disclosures to claim. This grant was funded by the CDC, although this does not, the findings and conclusions of myself and the other authors don't represent the official position of the CDC. My disclosure there. All right, so to get into the fun stuff, I'm going to be sharing some findings from the Communities Putting Prevention to Work project that was in Los Angeles County, and they called their CPPW, or Communities Putting Prevention to Work, Renew LA. Renew stood for Renew Environments for Nutrition, Exercise, and Wellness. So just to give you a quick snapshot of Los Angeles County, for those of you that aren't very familiar with it, it's a very large urban area, so this session is more on the low-income area of the title and not the rural area of the title of this overall session, but it's a very large urban area. Actually, it's 88 different cities. A lot of people aren't aware of the many cities in LA County. It isn't just Los Angeles, but a lot of other cities as well. Very densely populated, about 2,500 people per square mile, and it's rather diverse, as people may be aware of that fact. It's about half Latino, 15% Asian, 10% Black, African-American in these, communities are all mixed in, some by neighborhood, some all intermixed. It's quite a melting pot. It's a wonderful area. And over half of the people in LA County speak a language other than English at home. So again, very diverse, racially as well as ethnically. And there are high rates of obesity, and there are disparities in obesity, as we find in many urban cities. About 22% of LA County adults in general are obese, but 30% in Latino and African American adults. Quite a big difference there. And similar disparities in children, as you can see. So Renew in LA County was trying to address the overall rates of obesity, but also really the disparity in obesity in, across the different racial ethnic groups and across different income groups. As many of us are familiar, obesity rates are generally higher in low income groups. So there's a pretty large menu of activities here that Renew addressed. The findings I'm presenting today here are going to be focused on the findings from the joint use agreements, but I did want to highlight that second bullet there, improving physical education in schools. I'm presenting those findings tomorrow at 4:30, so you're invited to that session as well. So what is joint use or shared use, which it is sometimes called? Just for those of you that aren't familiar with the term, this is not necessarily a new phenomenon, but it's a phenomenon that's really gaining a lot of speed right now, and it's getting a lot of attention. I think it's a wonderful method for improving physical activity. It's basically a contract or written agreement outlining specific terms and conditions for shared use of public property or facilities, most always in schools. So in layman's terms, it's opening up the school to general community use when school hours, outside of school hours, generally outside of school hours. So this is after school, before school, evenings, weekends, etc. And this is taking place all over the U.S. It has a myriad of terms that is being described by this shared use. We call it joint use generally on the West Coast and in California, but there's different terms in other states and all across the U.S. So that's kind of the method we're going to be discussing today. So what Renew and LA County did around joint use? They first off established a joint use task force. Joint use moving people to play or jump. This is a wonderful task force, very strong participation. It's very sustainable. The CPPW Renew funding is wrapped up and the task force is continuing on. So this was a really wonderful way to kind of get some grassroots efforts started and continue on beyond the grant period. And then as part of the task force, other activities are growing out of it. And the other two major efforts of the joint use Renew intervention were establishing district-wide joint use agreements or joint use policies in 7 specific school districts across the county. So they looked at the county of LA and decided which school districts were both the most park poor, or the areas that didn't have enough physical activity spaces, as well as those that had high rates of obesity. So trying to target 7 school districts that would benefit most from joint use agreements, and passed district-wide agreements. So these are just policies on the district level encouraging the districts to have district-wide joint use agreements. But then within those same 7 districts, they worked on specific site agreements within schools. And so these are specific joint use agreements in specific sites within these 7 districts. And that's the findings I'm going to share today, are the specific site joint use findings. in these 7 school districts. So just to give you an idea, this is LA County in general, and the lighter areas are the areas that have less spaces for physical activity. So they chose 7 districts that were leaning towards less physical activity, and those little purple triangles are where joint use agreements were passed. So they were fairly fairly successful in trying to focus their joint use site-specific agreements in areas that needed more space to be physically active. So how did we evaluate this? We really wanted to go get out there on the ground and figure out in these sites where joint use agreements passed and were in the implementation phase, were people actually there using the sites? You know, sometimes we skip to the end goal, was there a change in BMI? We wanted to make sure that people were, you know, out there and using the sites. We wanted to see the behavior change, and then as we know, BMI change definitely comes down the line. It isn't something you can see in 1 or 2 years. So the methods that we used an environmental scan and usage assessments, and these were done in 12 different sites where the joint use agreement had been passed and was in the implementation phase. We did not do anything in sites that, you know, didn't have the joint use agreement on the ground yet. This is basically just kind of a post-intervention. And we weren't able to do a pre-post because we didn't really know which sites were going to pass a joint use agreement ahead of time. And in general, the joint use agreements, you know, weren't in place, so the pre would have just been observing something where there wasn't anything there. So we have a lot of feedback around why wasn't it a pre-post, because the baseline was there was nothing. The endpoint is there was a joint use agreement. There was a site we actually go and observe people using it. So in each of these 12 sites, we just did a general assessment that we designed, looking at the features and characteristics of the space, how large was it, was there equipment, that sort of thing. And then our main observational tool was a modified SOPARC system for observing physical activity in recreational centers. And this is a wonderful tool that's been validated, and it came out of San Diego. So what this consisted of was multiple scans over 2 different days. So in each of these 12 sites, we got information about when the joint use agreement was supposed to be in effect, and we visited those sites on 2 different days to try to get a bit of a variety. And during the time when the joint use agreement was in place, we did scans at multiple points in time. So if it was an after-school agreement, and say the agreement said that the school was open for physical activity between 2 p.m. and 8 p.m., we would show up at various points in time between 2 and 8 and do a scan. If it was an agreement that was after school as well as on a weekend, we would go and do an after-school observation, various scans after school, as well as whatever hours it was open on the weekend. Some of them were open for all day Saturday, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. We would go at various increments during the 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. and do a scan. And what we scanned was the basic demographics of the people using the site. So we counted how many people were there. We did a general observation of were they generally adults or children. We tried to get a bit of a demographic as far as racial ethnicity. We weren't comfortable targeting specifically were they Asian or Latino, so we just marked the numbers of Caucasian or non-Caucasian, because it's hard to, you know, be it can be somewhat subjective. But we did want to count whether it was, you know, generally Caucasian or non-Caucasian using the site, and then male, female. So just get a general count, who they were, what they looked like, the general ages. We documented what activities they were involved in when they were in the site, and then their, maybe most importantly, their activity levels. How active were they? Was it moderate to vigorous physical activity, or were they sedentary? And so these were, as I mentioned, all conducted after the joint use agreement had been implemented in that time period there. So what did we find? We were actually pretty pleased with our findings in general. Some interesting things came out. First of all, just the physical activity spaces. 83% of them were outdoors. The remainder were indoors. 91% were conducive to physical activity and had good quality equipment. The one site that was not was basically, it was just kind of a general, you know, open dirt field. And I believe when we observed it, it was a bit muddy, so it wasn't considered conducive to physical activity. But the majority of them were. And about 70% of them had shade. We thought that was interesting, especially, you know, LA County gets some pretty intense heat. As you can see, there was quite a bit of space available across all the sites. We did document the size of the spaces. About 43,000 square meters were now available for usage after Renew went into place. And then, as you can see, some of the sites are pretty small, ranging to very large. All right. So what were the conditions? Now, these were the conditions that we marked at every single observation. And we conducted, actually, I don't know if it's on the slides, about 172 different observations across these 12 sites. So quite a bit, quite a few individual scans were done across these 12 sites during this time period. 100% of them were accessible and usable. This was the most important thing. We wanted to check to actually make sure they were open and usable when the contract said they were, and they all were. So that's a good finding. About half of them were considered equipped and supervised and organized. This is something that we weren't aware of early on, and then it came out, and you'll see that we did some analysis. These are basically, while the site was open, was there programming in it? And this programming, about half the time, there was programming in these sites, and the programming consisted of things such as walking clubs, Zumba classes. There was one site that was a pool, so some organized swimming pool activities. Soccer games and soccer tournaments were oftentimes also used on the weekends, especially in these sites. So about half the time we observed them, there was programming, and something that kind of bubbled up during, and it was very interesting. You'll see some differences on the sites where there was programming versus not programming. About a third of the time we did the scans, though, the sites were empty. This was generally when there was not programming, and I'll get into some specifics on that. And 3% of the times we scanned it was dark, so it may have been, it was dark and there were no lights able to use. But in general, they were open and lit. So who did we observe using the sites? About 80% of the time it was general community members. 15% was a mix of community members and students at the same in the same time using the sites, and 5% of it was just students. This was specifically, I believe, in the pool site. There was actually the school PE was able to use the pool during the joint use time, which is a bit of a confusing delineation. But in general, it was used by community members and students at the same time in a small percentage of the sites. As far as adults and children, again, this is just observed. Sometimes it was, we couldn't tell if they were 18 or 19, but based on our, subjective observation, there were good numbers of each, more children than adults, but a good number of adults, almost 700, observed using these sites during the different joint use agreements, a few more males than females, and the vast majority were non-Caucasian. And as I said, that was the only delineation we made, but just subjectively, we did make some notes as to generally what communities were using the sites, and many of them had large Latino populations using the sites because these were generally in more Latino neighborhoods. LA has a very large Latino population, and so many of these non-Caucasian individuals were Latino, some African-American and Asians, but largely Latino, and a few Caucasians too. So the activity levels, we were really interested to see that two-thirds, almost three-quarters of the individuals in the sites were moderate or vigorously active when they were in the site. So the descriptions of these, sedentary means you're sitting or laying down or not moving at all. Moderate, so 51% of the individuals were involved in moderate activity. This is a walk or brisk walk, moving around at a moderate level. And then 17% were involved in vigorous activity, which is faster than a brisk walk or running. So we were really pleased to see about two-thirds to three-quarters of the people we observed were involved in moderate to vigorous physical activity. It's a pretty good number considering. This is where things got really interesting because during our observations, we were noticing anecdotally how many more individuals were in the sites when they were programmed. So we did some analysis, and these were the average number of individuals in a site where there was programming occurring versus when there was not programming occurring. And you can see here there was a very, very large increase when there was programming occurring. This may seem a bit common sense, but we wanted to analyze and actually have the hard numbers. So there was about 8 or 9 adults and about 13 children observed in sites where there was programming on average, and about 1 individual total on average in the sites where there were programming. So we just thought it was interesting to break this out. And that brings us to our general discussion implications. Physical activity programming in the joint use sites was associated with 16-fold higher level of usage. So we really, in general recommend if this shared use or joint use work is going into place, try to partner with YMCAs, with Boys and Girls Clubs, with Girl Scouts, with the local park and rec department to actually have some programming when the joint use is in place. And that lets people know that there's actually, you can come in and use the school. And even if the program doesn't continue on, people get used to coming and using this space right off the bat. And they're aware that the school is open and they can come in and use it. So that's one of our main recommendations. About 3/4, actually more like 2/3 of all users were engaged in moderate to vigorous physical activity. We thought this was great. That means people are actually using the site for activity. And as I mentioned, provision of programming substantially increased the number of users. Joint use, we haven't been able to do an official cost analysis, but we think it's a very cost-efficient way to increase activity spaces because you don't need to build anything, it's already there, and joint use may actually draw more attention and resources from the community to improve the space if possible. So down the line, you know, we've discussed trying to figure out the cost of what went into this, break it up by the number of joint use agreements that were passed, and we can kind of have a dollar number per joint use agreement, and we're assuming it would actually be fairly affordable as compared to some other physical activity methods. So those are our general takeaway and discussion. I think I have a couple minutes. If there's any burning questions, we'll take one or two now before we go on to the next speaker. Yeah. As far as incidents, we did conduct some online surveys before and after with individuals on the site. I didn't have time to present that here today. I don't believe there were any obvious incidents, and I'll actually go to Michaela here in the audience. Is Michaela here? She's not. Okay. She was going to be here. She did more of the programming. We did not document any specific incidents in our surveys officially. There may have been, you know, a little bit of increased litter. We tried to get people who pass these joint use sites to complete our surveys before and after, but nothing obvious. And actually, we're working on some papers, and we'll be doing a presentation at the Childhood Obesity Conference a few months out on this, talking about the barriers and how to overcome the barriers or the perceived barriers that a lot of sites have when you bring up the idea of shared use. Because a lot of schools, districts, et cetera, they just balk at the idea of opening up to the public. There's liability issues. It's a whole other presentation upon itself. I see a lot of people nodding heads. You know, this is an issue. I didn't have time to address that today, but we, in general, did not find major barriers as we thought. So, you know, that's an interesting finding as well. I know other sites have, but we want to try to, you know, bring a lot of people doing this work together to talk about, you know, how to overcome those barriers or perceived barriers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, given some of our built environment work and some of our work to, you know, open up spaces with the idea that if you create them, you know, people will come and actually utilize the space, that's a really interesting finding. Are you finding that, like, there's other research that you know of replicates that finding about the 16-fold increase?
You know, in general, we have not seen that much published research on joint use. I know there's a little bit out there. We have actually submitted this in a paper. It's currently being revised in Preventing Chronic Disease, hopefully in publication pretty soon. But we actually we aren't aware of many other journal articles with that same linkage, so we're hoping to get this published soon to be able to cite. But are others aware of an actual study that program increases usage? Because we haven't seen that. Again, it seems like common sense that that's what would happen, but we haven't seen it in the literature yet. Yeah.
Do you know of any research on schools that aren't currently being used for school, but maybe still sitting in a community not being used, and then having an agreement with the county or the school system to open them just for physical activities and programming?
So, sorry, I don't know if I fully understand the question.
So, joint use because the school is currently operational and...
Oh, you mean the school is closed, that is not open for usage.
Is there anybody doing something similar where they're using...
I'm not aware of that, but that's actually would be really interesting, especially now with budget cuts and whatnot. I know quite a few schools are actually sitting empty.
Right.
It's a good question. Yeah.
How did the programming come about in the joint?
How did the programming come about? That's basically thanks to wonderful work by LA County. They kind of anticipated, or you know, I think they had some foresight in thinking that just unlocking the gates may not actually bring people in. So in order to generate more interest and more movement around these agreements, they started to partner with the Boys and Girls Club, the YMCA, Parks and Rec departments. They had contacts already through other work. And they said, listen, we have a school that's open. Do you want to hold your baseball practice afterwards? Do you want to have mothers do a walking club before school? That was one of the really common and successful programming things we saw was walking clubs before school for mothers. They were just wildly popular. We saw a lot of women coming, and it works really nicely because they can bring their kids to school, do the drop-off, come a little early, walk with their friends, you know, bring their younger kids in strollers, chat, gossip, catch up, do the kid drop-off, and then go back home. They loved it. So those walking clubs before school were one of the most successful programs we had. It just kind of happened organically a little bit. Yeah, I think that's the end of my time.